We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is the Sooner Sports Podcast, your all-access pass to Sooner Sports. The Sooner Sports Podcast is presented by Allstate. Are you in good hands? And by Riverwind Resort. Riverwind Resort, the place to be.
Oh, mama! What a play!
Now, here's your host, Chris Plank.
All right, welcome into the Sooner Sports Podcast. My name is Chris Plank, and we are loaded on a very special Friday edition. Coming up here in moments, Toby Rowland, the voice of the Sooners, will sit down with Teddy Lehman as we look back on the tough loss from Saturday against Kansas State and get you ready for next Saturday's showdown against Iowa State. We'll hear the Lincoln-Riley press conference in its entirety. That's coming up a little bit later on in the pod. Patty Gasso will swing by. We'll talk about Sooner softball, and we'll wrap things up with a very special announcement. But let's kick things off by looking back on a tough loss to Kansas State. Toby Rowland, Teddy Lehman look back on Saturday in Manhattan.
So let's cut to the chase. What happened? In your mind, you look back, you've had a couple of nights to sleep on it now. How did that happen?
Well, I honestly think it was a total team loss. Obviously, defensively, we had a bad day. I think offensively, we didn't have our for what reason. This is the first time this year that we've had to kind of respond to a team going up and down about our defense. And I don't know that panic is the right word, but we got outside of what we typically do, running the football, I think. There's a couple of turnovers that, the one right there before halftime really, really hurt. And then we lose the ball on special teams on that pooch kick that they had. I mean, it's honestly, it's everywhere. It's, defensively, third down was killer. Some third and extra longs, penalties were a killer. We had a guy ejected for kicking someone. We lost Turner Yale to injury. I mean, it was honestly everything that could go wrong here. And you got to give Kansas State credit for having a heck of a game plan. You really do. They had a good game plan, both sides of the ball, executed really nicely, and it wasn't our day.
The OU defense has looked so good all year. Kansas State offensively has looked pretty average. What was so difficult about what they were doing on Saturday?
They had some really good stuff in the running game. And they were very smart about using the way we fit some of our runs against us. They were the way we were lining up on some stuff, we have our Mike linebacker to the field, and they were getting it unbalanced and kind of reading our Mike if he was fast flowing and going really quick, because the way we fit some runs, we spill and overlap, and they were trying to get him to run, and whenever he would, because of the spill and overlap, they would cut it back on us. And, that was going on and some stuff, and then they started started stretching us outside to get outside of the twist and stunt that we run on the inside, and they had success out there. It was just a really good game plan. And here's the other thing. Skylar Thompson threw some really good balls. I mean, he had an excellent day throwing the football, and he fitted into some really tight windows at times, and those are throws that he doesn't make every week. It was his week.
All right, let's skip to the end. The onside kick is going to be has been the source of a lot of controversy. I'm sure we're going to talk about it a lot today. CJ, you would have been proud of Teddy. He did some big J journalism on Saturday. He left the booth and went down and sought out the replay officials after the game. I don't think in an adversarial manner. I think in a journalistic manner. At least that's what I choose to believe. I don't think he went down there.
So Teddy didn't allow himself to go where I allowed myself to go on Sunday at a flag football game.
What's that?
For the first time in my kid's playing career, I yelled at an official, "You are terrible at your job."
I cannot confirm that because I wasn't there. All I know is as soon as the game ended, Ted disappeared.
Right.
And then about 10 minutes later, he came back and he had talked to the replay officials.
Well, I'm proud of it. He knew he needed answers for Sooner Nation.
Yeah. So, Ted, help us understand. Well, just tell us what they told you.
Right. So I found the guy in the hallway and I asked him about it, and I asked him about the specific rule of forced touching. Okay, now this is the rule that everyone keeps citing. And his explanation for forced touching is whenever someone purposely tries to block someone into a ball to make them touch it so that team can now recover it. So it really doesn't apply to the receiving team. It doesn't apply to Kansas State for forced touching because they can recover that ball inside that 10-yard no-go zone. That doesn't apply to them. So it's more so would apply to Oklahoma. Let's say the onside kick didn't go 10 yards. It would apply to Oklahoma trying to force a Kansas State player into that ball to where Oklahoma can now recover it. That's the forced touching rule. So, like, there has to be intent. The contact between the two players is fine. There's no problem with that inside that 10 yard, but the Kansas State player wasn't trying to force the Oklahoma player into the ball. There's nothing to gain from that. So, That's his ruling, and he said that the conference group in Las Colinas, the group at the replay, at the stadium doing the replay, and the official on the field, all three agreed that rule does not apply, and so the touching of the ball inside of the 10-yard zone by Trajan Bridges is the That's the ruling.
All right. Now, that's one thing. Do you agree with it?
I do. I mean, because, you know, I could read the rule, and reading the rule, it's like, well, he blocked him, so he's deemed to have not touched the ball, but that's not what that rule is there for. So, and I had an official explain it to me, so that's why I think the call was correct. Had I not had someone explain to me what that rule is for, I mean, the name of the rule is forced touching. And Kansas State didn't force Trajan Bridges to touch the football against his will or whatever you want to say there. I agree with the call. I think it was the proper call.
For me, then, that language needs to be changed. Like, I can understand what you just explained, but that's not how it's read, in my opinion.
Let's talk about that for the next 2.5 hours. Because, well, I kind of agree with you, TJ, to some extent, but we only got Ted for like 2 more minutes here. So, OU is not out of this thing, theoretically, Teddy. You know, crazy things happen in college football. I know today that's not going to be a popular thing to say in Sooner Nation, but theoretically they can win the rest of them, and if things happen their way, they could get back in this thing. Is what we saw on Saturday, in your mind, fixable to the extent where this team could still win the rest of their games, win a Big 12 championship, and go to a college football playoff?
I think so. I think this, I mean, this defense has looked really good this year. This is a bad day, bad performance. Yes, I think it's fixable. I don't think that there's a whole lot of people that are going to be able to replicate exactly what Kansas State did out there. I mean, I don't know anyone else has a 6'5", 255-pound fullback. It's just a one-off offense that we're not going to see in this league. So I think they're going to be fine. They're going to rally. They're going to bounce back. They've got a bye week to reassess, look at things. I think they're going to be okay. It's going to be painful, but I think they're going to be okay. There's a reason, guys, that this is the first time since, 2004, been undefeated, 7-0, which is crazy to think about. But, you know, we've accomplished a lot of great things since 2004, so I wouldn't think by any stretch the season's over.
Good perspective from the voice, Toby Rowland, and the Butkus and Bednarik Award winner and the radio analyst on the Sooner Radio Network, Teddy Lehman. Let's look back on Saturday and look ahead to next week with Sooner head coach Lincoln Riley and his Tuesday meeting with the media.
Both doing well. We're going to reevaluate Calcaterra here through the week, but no update on him. DeLaren's doing well. I mean, we're not at the point where we have to make any decisions, but he's progressing well. Yeah, we've had a good start to the week. I mean, I think our team knows what we're capable of, and so there's a lot of belief and confidence in the room, but also a harsh sense of reality that we've got to go play that way too. You know, having the ability to do it's one thing, and we've done it the majority of the year, and so there's definitely a lot of things that we got to continue to improve on. You know, having a healthy respect for what it takes to win, you know, any game, especially on the road. And a healthy respect for, you know, what it takes just for us to play our best ball. You know, it's hard. I mean, the margins are slim. When you win, a lot of times you make a lot of those plays by that much. And then when you don't win, you know, and case in point, the other day was probably, we didn't have many losses here, but I would say this one was, we probably had more difference-making plays in the game that we didn't make. I mean, there's one of, you say that every time that you don't win, but you know, this one has more than I can remember of, you know, we make one more on any other side and so many golden opportunities to do it and to not, you know, not make it. You got to learn from it, and it's got to be something that galvanizes the team. It's done it in the past. We know the blueprint. We know exactly what it takes to do it, but we got to put that in action with this team, and this team's got to take it forward. We've gotten off to a good start this week with that.
Lincoln, do you have it in your mind if you got the onside kick and score, did you know if you were going to go for one or two?
Yeah, I had a pretty good idea. Don't know that strategy-wise, I won't say what, but we had a decent plan. I mean, there was two kind of good trains of thought there. I mean, I felt good about us getting a 2-point conversion, but we also had all the momentum in the world too. So even though conventional wisdom says on the road, you know, a lot of times people say we'll go for two, but I think too that's more of a momentum deal too, and we had obviously a ton of momentum at that point. So I don't know that you really could have gone wrong, but we did have a plan going in. Yes.
I know you don't like to compare year. Are there any specific traits from 15, 17, 18 that you can bring to this year's group?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just all in the approach of the team, and you know, games like that, you know, they either, you know, rip you apart or they bring you closer together. A lot of times, there's no middle ground, and you know, it's one of those deals where everyone, coaches, players, everybody involved, has got to, you know, be willing to look in the mirror and, you know, what do I need to do better for this team for it to play at its elite level? And then everybody's got to take action on that and consistently take action. It's not about just one bye week or just the next game. I mean, it's got to be consistent here through the end. And so you got to believe in yourself first, you know, not listen to the outside who's going to tell you how sorry you are. You've got to believe in yourself and your capabilities, which I believe our team does. And then you got to go put it into action and do better. And we're, you know, we're going to do everything we possibly can to get to that. No, I mean, there's a lot of messages from a game like that. I think you got to be ready for the kind of games that you're going to get, especially on the road from good football teams, you know. And I don't, you know, watching our team, I mean, you know, I don't know that we were as mentally prepared to go handle that for a four-quarter game. And, you know, that responsibility is, you know, ultimately mine. And you know, they've got to be ready for the kind of fight that it's going to be on the road. And, you know, I don't – and then you've got to understand the momentum swings of the road, you know, how do you handle it? And that's the first kind of true, real, you know, road atmosphere that we've been in this year. And at times at the end of the game we handled it well. At the beginning of the game we handled it well, certainly in the middle there, and especially the third quarter. I mean, that's the one that, you know, you just look at and – so many missed opportunities where you've got to understand when a team gets momentum, whole crowd behind them, road atmosphere, all that, you got to understand what it takes to dig yourself out. And that's you got to have fight and energy, and we had that. You also got to do your job and do it within the context of what we're doing on all three sides of the ball from a scheme standpoint, and we did not do a good job of that, specifically in the third quarter. I don't know. I mean, it is what it is, I guess, to us. There's positives of both. You know, part of you can't wait to get back on the field to play somebody else, you know. And then there's also certainly things we need to do better as a team. There's some, you know, some guys that, you know, be good to get healthy. There's some guys that need some reps here through the week to be ready for this closing stretch. So there's certainly some advantages. So we're just going to look at it from the positive and have a great week. I mean, there's a little bit of both. You know, we've done a few runs with him that, you know, that's been pretty successful for us this year, and are, you know, can be pretty tough to defend. And then certainly he's had a couple times, you know, obviously, you know, specifically in the second half the other day when, you know, you get behind and you're having to throw at some to conserve some clock, you know, and you know it and they know it, and you're going to have some opportunities to run and have positive plays there. So I don't know if I could – I mean, percentage-wise, all that, tough to put a number on it, honestly. But there's a little bit of both. And, I mean, you know, in reality, you know, they've both been pretty effective.
You've had some time to look at film and talk with Alex, I guess. You know, you said last week, and you, everybody was pretty excited about the defense. And through seven games, what we saw was just so much different than what happened Saturday. Were you able to get any solid answers about why you think that specific defensive performance happened?
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, I mean, to me, it's two things. I mean, defense is, you got to get the ball back, I mean, one way or another. And if you don't create turnovers and you don't get off the field on long yardage, like, there's not very other many good options for defense. I mean, and so, you know, we haven't gotten turnovers the last four games, but we have done a tremendous job of getting off the field. And so we've, in some ways, offset that by a ton of three and outs by being extremely good in the third downs. And in this game, and not getting the turnovers puts a strain on your defense. I mean, you have to play at such a high level when you're not getting turnovers because it forces you. You got to go out and execute, you know, multiple plays every single series to stop people. And so, and against us, so many people are aggressive offensively. A lot of times, if you look at, like, the number of times we've gone for it on fourth down versus what people have gone for us, it's a huge disparity. And so a lot of times it's not just three downs. You have to defend four. So, you know, I mean, obviously there's two answers. I mean, we have to get turnovers, and that probably the biggest difference in the game, you know, really the other day was, you know, there was some quality ball played by both sides, both offenses, both defenses, a lot of quality ball. The biggest difference was, you know, Kansas State was able to take advantage of our missteps, and we didn't take advantage of theirs. You know, we drop a ball, they make a play on it. You know, they made a couple of big plays and big moments we didn't make. You know, quarterback played fantastic, but he hit us in the face with the ball twice. You know, we don't catch it. I mean, those are the, you know, those are the big ones. Ball's on the ground, they get it. Ball in the kickoff's on the ground, they get it. You know, those big game or those big opportunities. And so, now for us defensively, you know, we've got to get off the field, or we've got to get turnovers. And obviously, if we can do both, that's when you play at an elite level.
Lincoln, Trajan's not a little kid by any means, but I'm sure he's never been thrown football wise like what Saturday brought. How is he responding?
Oh, he's fine. I mean, Trajan did exactly what we told him to do. You know, I mean, that's Trajan's fine. I mean, he's doing a good job for us. Played well on special teams, doing some good things offensively. I want to keep getting him more involved. He's a really talented kid, but I'll be honest, we've practiced that onside here for a long time, and I don't know that we've ever executed it as good as we did during the game. So, he's great.
Lincoln, as far as the replay itself goes, how does it feel when you're in a game and they're not going to review the entire play, things that are happening within the play? And I'm sure there's other plays like that, but does that bother you at all about the replay system?
Yeah, I mean, it's you know, it is what it is. It's, you know, there's a lot of positives of it. You know, I think sometimes new situations come up like this where it shows some areas that the system needs to get better, you know, and especially on game-changing plays at the end where we got a chance to take a look at the whole picture. You know, you hate that we miss those, you know. But that's, again, that's not what got us beat. We would obviously, if we had the ball, we're going to have a chance to win it, but we had plenty of other opportunities for that thing to not come down to a call that could go either way.
Like in the NCAA today, in some way, shape, or form, said it's going to allow players to reap some sort of income off their likenesses. I don't know that you've given it any thought, but do you have any thoughts about it?
Not much yet. I mean, I think it's certainly not surprising, and I think it can be a positive thing. It will be certainly interesting to see, you know, how it's all put together. I mean, to me, that's the bigger question is, you know, how do you put it together? How do you maintain, you know, amateur status of players, the integrity of college sports? And so, you know, they've got obviously, I think, a little bit of time to do that, but it'll be very important to the future of this game, the future of all the athletes, everybody involved with it, to how it's put together, because it's, you know, we're kind of venturing into the unknown there.
Do you think there's any input for coaches on this, or is it a matter for ADs and maybe college presidents?
No, I think there will be some, you know, coaches, you know, a lot of coaches have been a part of it for a long time, but I mean, I'm sure this is going to take everybody, you know, hearing from student athletes. We've taken a lot of steps over the last few years to, you know, for their well-being and to try to continue to make things better and, you know, want to continue to do that. And but I think it's something that we can't have tunnel vision on. We got to make sure and look at all sides, because once you go down this road, you don't go back.
Do you foresee any issues such as disparity in earning in the locker room? My quarterback makes $1,000 a week and I only make $50 a week. You know what I mean?
It'll be interesting, you know, in that way it'll be a little bit more like the pros, you know, in some way. And so it'll be interesting if they try to make it uniform for all players, or if it's, you know, based on your notoriety. I mean, there's a lot of stuff a lot of people got to work through, and I'm glad I don't have to do it.
with the bye week, how important is it for y'all to have a little bit of balance of, you know, not harping on everything you did wrong this whole time, but also kind of showing the players exactly what they did right in that comeback?
Yeah, no, there's definitely some of that from that game, because in reality, most teams down 25 with, you know, a little over, I don't know what it was, 12 minutes, 12 and a half minutes, whatever it was, you know, completely shut it down. Most teams aren't capable. So there'll be another game this year where we'll get down and we'll have to come back and win it. I mean, that's just the reality of it. And so there's definitely fight there. There's these things – it's like I told the team the other day, these things always go. You go win you know, 60-20. Everybody think you're the greatest team ever, and you go back and watch it, and there's, you know, a ton wrong. It's never as good as you think it is, and the flip side, it's never as bad. So there's still a ton of positives from this team, from these first games, even from the game the other day. And so, no, we've got to – the things we're doing well, the things we're excited about, we've got to keep going, and we've got to take a hard look at all the things that we need to do better and specifically address them. You said offensive line?
Yes.
We did some good things. We did. We had a couple of breakdowns and some key moments that hurt us. You know, and they're a talented front. You know, a couple times we got beat just one-on-one, just guys in the right spot and all that, and give their guys credit. They beat us a few times. But I thought we held in there and did some good things, kind of like the rest of our group, a little bit up and down, but certainly played well enough to give us a chance to win. Yeah.
The game he had, not only the game, but all season. Just talk about his role and how close was that kicking competition to start the season?
No, he gave us a chance the other day. He may have been our best player on the whole field. He did a tremendous job. I mean, those were big kicks. They weren't easy kicks, you know, either some distance or in pressure moments, and did a tremendous job. So had a lot of confidence there in the end to be able to kick that and try to make it a one-score game. So yeah, he was fantastic. The competition early was really close. I mean, it was, and I think, you know, both those guys did a good job, and then we also had some desire to, you know, try to be able to spread those jobs out a little bit. But, you know, Gabe has just come on, and he's been a little bit of a gamer, you know. He does well in practice, but then, you know, he gets in the game and has a good way about himself, good confidence. As far as I've been told, process is still playing out. No, I mean, the first one was, I thought, pretty obvious. You know, we'd had a good drive, and then I thought was well within his range. So I didn't think much about the first one. Second one before half, I mean, that one was really obvious. And then the one at the end of the game. I did have a little indecision about the one at the end of the game because we were down there. It was a fourth and very makeable. And obviously, you know, I used the timeout probably about, I don't know, 5-7 seconds later than I should have. But I did have a little bit of indecision about that one. The other one, I think maybe like a 4th-and-3 down there on the left hash. I thought about those two a little bit. I did, you know, trying to gauge how the game was going at that point. And really the most of those field goals until the last one, you know, we were either up or it was a close game, one of the two. So I didn't second guess much of them after the fact. No.
Lincoln, any changes to the bye week schedule? Still getting the players?
Yeah, we got after it last 2 days. We'll get after it again tomorrow. We'll practice Thursday morning, and then we'll get our guys out here. So we've modified the practices a little bit, just knowing it's not, you know, last time we did this, it was after week 3. This is a little bit later in the season, so modifying a little bit for, you know, where our team's at. But I would say no significant changes.
Lincoln's pass was passing through that was intercepted. I'm not sure I've ever seen a receiver or halfback pass where a guy did what he did.
Yeah.
The play he's throwing is not there.
Yeah.
Instead of running, he scrambled and found an open guy. Made a good pass.
Yeah, absolutely.
But would you rather that a non-quarterback, if the original play's not there, just take off and run? Or do you still give him the freedom to?
Oh, yeah. No, he's, you know, it's those deals for us are, you know, there's some trust involved. And, you know, he had a couple options on that play, and he made a great decision, you know, and it was, you know, Rambles played well for us all year. Disappointing because, I mean, obviously, to, you know, for it to end up in other teams' hands, but if you look at the tape, CD's over there on the left side to make a block, and Lee Morris is on the left side to make a block. I mean, there's a, I would say, better 50% chance if he catches, he probably scores, you know, and then everybody's saying it's the greatest play they've ever seen. So, you know, that's, it was, now set up well. He made a good read, made a good throw. You know, just you know, one of those that happens.
In regard to the open day, how busy are you and the staff going to be recruiting?
We'll be busy. Yeah, we'll get out. We'll practice. Part of the reason we practice early Thursday morning is so some of our coaches won't be at that practice. They'll go ahead and get out and get in place because We got to hit these 2 days hard. This calendar on the back end is really, really different this year. I mean, everything is a week later, and it's, you know, the whole bowl season combined with signing day and all that is going to be it's going to be interesting. So we've got to get a lot of work done in these next few days, and a lot of guys that we're all excited to get out and see. So we'll be all hands on deck from Thursday on out on the road. I think a constant hunger to improve and just the desire to win a championship. You know, we've put ourselves in that position again going into November. I mean, we're right there where we want to be, and you know, we've got some great opportunities coming up against some really good football teams, starting with Iowa State here. That's what November ball is about. You know, do you get tired of doing it? Do you get tired of the workouts and all the things you do all year, tired of the grind, or you excited to play your very best ball? And that's where we have to be.
What have you been seeing from Spencer Rattler in practice?
Well, he's done well. He's gotten he's done a few things with us, and then done a nice job on the scout team. That's been good for both him and our defense of getting to face those guys, you know, with a lot of reps each and every day. And then like a lot of our young guys, he's in our developmental lifting, and so he's getting a pretty aggressive training sessions as well. So progressing well and just getting better and better. What's that?
You guys have had some losses in the past that were kind of shocking, and you want to regroup.
Well, remember this. Every loss at OU is shocking. Remember that. I mean, Bob told me that the other day after, and he's right. Rarely do we ever play a game that we're not favored, and rarely, you know, do we ever play a game that everybody in the world doesn't expect us to win. So, you know, they're all shocking. Trust me.
That is true.
Yeah.
But this is the one that I think is the only one I can remember where you've just decided that players aren't going to be available to media. Is that what made this one different this week, or this loss a little different than past ones?
Just the vibe of this team a little bit. And not in a negative way at all. I think in each and every one of these, you try to decide, you know, what's going to be best for the team in this moment. And this team's had a lot of attention and a lot of new things coming at them. And I felt like just in a few different ways, some with the practice schedule, some with the media schedule, all that, that we just needed a week to catch our breath. He's done a good job for him. I mean, he can make some good throws, tight windows. He's competitive. He's done a good job leading that group there. So, you know, it helps to have a really good scout team quarterback. We've had a few of them around here over the years that have made us better, and he's certainly done a really good job. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I mean, live reps, live rush coming at you, you know, coverage by good DBs, tight coverage, you know, competitive moments. Our defensive practices are extremely competitive right now. And every one of those that you can get for those guys. I mean, because that rush doesn't feel like the one in high school, you know, and those DBs cover a little bit different than they did in high school. So it was great for Tanner last year. It was great for Kyler a few years ago. It was great for Baker a few years ago. I mean, it makes a world of difference for those guys.
I know you guys always, because of the running back, you know, the number of carries from the running backs in the offense, moving forward, you hope you'll be able to get that balance back in your offense going forward.
Yeah, just, you know, you hope that you can end up with a few more plays to get it done. And then obviously, you know, don't want to be in situations there at the end where you got to play catch up. We've got some really good backs that we want to continue to get involved. We've got several players that we want to continue to get more involved. But, you know, when you're popping off 50 plays a game, you know, and you've got a quarterback that's the kind of runner that we have right now, you know, there's the carries are going to take a little bit of a hit. I mean, it's just a matter of numbers. No, not necessarily. I mean, that's, you know, like a lot of these other games, when we get off the field defensively and we don't have three and outs offensively, it's our advantage. And so we've got to, you know, we can't force how teams are going to play against us. We've got to go play our game.
You always say it doesn't matter what time you play, you far as just the logistics, recruiting, all that stuff, how nice is it to give a 9-game
Yeah, no, we're excited about it. I mean, we are. I would imagine our fan base is pretty excited about it too. So, yeah, it's great for recruiting. Good just to change it up a little bit. And, you know, we're looking forward to playing under the lights. There's still never anything like that. So, I would imagine Norman, Oklahoma, next Saturday at 7 o'clock is going to be rocking. We can't wait.
Thank you. We're in the light store. Four of your players named the national semifinalists: Jalen and CV for the Maxwell and Neville and Kenneth Murray for the Bednarik. Would you like to talk about your performance and your recognition?
Yeah, they've done a good job. Those guys have all been good leaders for us and good players that have done things the right way. And so it's fun to see kids that do things the right way, you know, get some honors. And, you know, when your team does well, like kind of the same approach we've always had with the individual awards here. You know, when your team does well, then some guys are going to get individual recognition, and that's nice. And hopefully our team can keep doing well, and then more nice things will come for our guys.
On the trick play with Nick Basquin and the flea flicker, did you guys know right when he fell that that was going to end up going as far as it did?
No, right when what?
Right, he fell and purposely fell. And missed.
Yeah.
Is that what you kind of knew that play was going to break off?
I mean, we thought it had a chance. Yeah, but I mean, there was a lot of things that had to go well to make it happen. We did a good job on the protection end and exchange end, and there was a decent degree of difficulty with that one, but they did a good job with it.
Did you have an update on Grant?
Yeah, I think I said, just kind of day to day. We're gonna get through this week and then reevaluate him.
How is Caleb Kelly progressing? Is there a chance that he gets to see the field?
He's doing great. Yeah, no, he's close. He's fully clear, doing some nice things. We're progressing him up. You know, being fully cleared and then being ready to play are two different things. So he's been doing a lot of things with us here for the last few weeks and is getting better quickly. Yeah, we'll see. Yeah, I told him that'll be the one rule. When he's back on the field, then he's got to can't play both sides of that.
Obviously, we now start intersecting with basketball. We've got women's hoops, which truly gets underway early next week, a Monday showdown with OCU, and the next Friday in the first round of the women's NIT against Prairie View A&M. Men's basketball gets things started this week, but my eyes are already on to softball. And with the fall schedule coming to an end tonight as the Sooners wrap things up against UTA, not a bad time to catch up with Sooner softball coach Patty Gasso.
Everyone kind of freaks out with one loss, you know, and it's just one of those situations, coach. You can attest to it more than anyone. These are young kids. I mean, these are young adults, and sometimes getting them focused where you need them for, if it's seven innings, if it's four quarters, if it's two halves, whatever it is, it can be a challenge, can't it?
It is. Man, it's so much tougher for football because every game can make or feel like it can break you. But I know that Lincoln Riley is a phenomenal leader, and he's been here before. But it is not always easy to have a team pumped and ready and, like, putting it all out there every single game. And sometimes we have good days and bad days, but the thing about our sport is, you know, the next day you're always playing and you can make a wrong right. In football, you got to wait a full week, or if you have a bye week, you've got to wait 2 weeks to get out there and do it the right way. And that's kind of hard to live by, but I've got full faith in our team and our coach. So go get it right.
We'll get it right in a couple weeks. Now, you had a fall ball game last night, one more left on Friday against UTA at 6:30. I know this is very generic and very general, but what's kind of really caught your eye about this, I mean, basically new-look team that you have heading into 2020? Has there been anything about this team that's kind of surprised you through the fall schedule?
We're athletic. There's no doubt about that. We've got a little more speed. I think anyone would tell you, me included, it's just really different not having, you know, your normal Sid, Shay, Fale, CeCe, Reagan, Kylie Lumberg. I mean, for 4 years, they've just been winning national championships or playing in national championships. So it's just a whole different look that even I have to get used to. And I'm still trying to maintain the expectation that we need to live by, and it's different for 9 newcomers. That's about half of our team are newcomers, but it's fun because you get to teach. It's frustrating at times, but it's the final product that makes you go, wow. And that's, I mean, like any team, we have good days. A lot of times we have bad days. There's just a lot to learn, and the game moves fast for some of them. But what I come out of it is that I've got to keep pushing forward along with my coaches to get them to understand that our expectation is to be one of the top teams in the country, and practice needs to move quicker. We got to be smarter. There's a lot of things still ahead of us. But at the same time, any coach who loves coaching, I'm coaching now. I'm back to coaching, a lot of teaching, a lot of trying to get them to understand. But we are very athletic, and we still will have the power that we're losing. Maybe not the same, but in different ways.
How, and Patagasso joins us. Coach, how fun is fall ball from this perspective, getting to experiment a little bit? For instance, I saw on the box score last night, Grace Green playing a little right field. See Jocelyn Allo out in center field. Seeing Kinsey Kelso, who I think has a great future in front of her, playing a little outfield. I saw Grace Lyons playing some first base. Is that just kind of part of you being able to experiment and kind of moving some pieces around a little bit during the fall?
100% not.
Oh.
That is purely for reasons of injury or people that have class that night. And rule at OU is you cannot miss class for a fall game. So yesterday I literally had 8 players that were, I mean, I could have put pitchers at the plate and I wasn't going to do that. So for about an hour and a half, we had just 8 hitters in our lineup hitting.
Wow.
We couldn't even fill a full roster because I had 6 of them in class, or 5 of them in classes, night classes, and we had to reschedule this because of the weather. So that I knew we were going to be a little upside down, but once we got everybody in the last couple of innings, we just unloaded. But we were not so great for the first 6 innings or so.
How's the battles going at third and second right now? Because, again, and I'm assuming here, Coach, so you can slap me around if I'm wrong, but I feel like Grace Lyons showed that she can be a next-level shortstop. I mean, again, Grace Green is an athlete, so she can play first, or you could probably put her anywhere. But there's pretty good battles, I would imagine, going on at third and second right now. How are those coming along?
Yeah, there's a lot going on around us, to be honest. I think Grace Lyons has secured her spot at shortstop, and I've been experimenting with other players there just to see how athletic they are and their willingness to play other positions. And one that really stands out to me is Mackenzie Donahue from Mustang, and I've had her at short, I've had her at third, I've had her at second, she's played first, she's been in the outfield. And for me, I love athletes that can do a lot of things. If they can only do one thing, then they better be super dang good and better than everybody else at that position. Otherwise, you're going to be watching. So at third, we've got some battles with Elia Flores, who's been really swinging the bat well. So I feel like she's kind of taken the lead on that battle. I've got Taylan Snow, who is a transfer from Auburn, who is very good at second base and very likely going to be our leadoff batter. She is nursing a little injury right now, so she's been out for a couple games. But her and Donahue, Audrey LaValle, has been working at second. But I've also had Audrey playing a little bit of first, along with Mackenzie Donahue, who is all of maybe 5'3", but she is a grind. She grinds it. She's a hard working kid, like a blue collar style, a gamer type. So I really like her in the lineup. Anytime you've got freshmen, though, they're just really trying to understand our system of hitting, and, you know, and high school and travel ball, they could be the four-hole hitter, big, strong hitter. But now they're facing another level of pitching, and everything changes. So we got to keep their confidence up, because the pitchers that we're throwing at them, they struggle with. And so there's a lot of transitioning going on, a lot of learning. Kinsey Hansen, who's a big-time player out of California, she's been catching. We also have her at first base, and she's about 6'1 or 6'2, so she fits kind of naturally there. Grace Green is finding a lot of comfort in the outfield, and I think that is where she is the most comfortable, and it really works well. She's very, very good out there.
She's an athlete, yeah.
She is. So we've got a lot going on, and every day looks different, sometimes good, sometimes not, but it's kind of a new phase in our program, like a new generation or a new, you know, starting over. And this is a group that's really learning a lot about themselves and trying to bond together. And so we still have a ton of work ahead of us, but I'm excited. I'm anticipating a lot of wow moments with a bunch of freshmen. We have a bunch of freshmen on the mound as well, and they've made slow improvements. But last night in 9 innings, we struck out collectively 19, walked 3, and gave up 2 hits.
Wow.
So that's not bad. Man, we're not using Giselle Juarez right now. So I'm optimistic about this pitching staff and what they bring.
Is not using G just giving other players an opportunity, kind of knowing what you have with G?
Yeah, I mean, okay. She's dealing with a little bit of some elbow stuff, and it's not worth putting someone out there if they're not feeling 100%. So we're pretty cautious, and I think pretty smart about the way we use our what I call your franchise players. I don't want to hurt any of them or do something dumb trying to push things in a fall game. The fall game is usually meant for, in my opinion, meant for upperclassmen to lead and underclassmen to learn. So, we're just being cautious, really.
You know, it's interesting, and maybe these are games that, because I don't know, I guess I feel like I've done this for a minute. I feel like that I've been able to call your games for about 4 or 5 years now. And so I'm always kind of thinking ahead when we get towards the midpoint of last year. And during last season, looking ahead was a challenge because there was so much with, I don't have to tell you, Sid and Kaylee and all these standout players, just like it was the year before. And I started thinking, who's going to step up and be this team's leader? And I immediately kind of thought with her personality that Lindsay Elam had an opportunity to do that. And then I see the numbers she's putting up and just hitting. And I know it's a different level of pitching, coach. But with that in mind, have you seen an elevation in the leadership and responsibility that someone like Lindsay Elam has taken with this program and that responsibility?
Yeah, absolutely. She's learning how to be a strong leader. It's new to her because she's been following Sid and Shay and, you know, the rest. So it's all of a sudden you're put in a spotlight and being told you need to lead this team. There's a lot that goes into that. And she's pretty natural that way, but we still have a lot to learn. Grace Lyons has stepped up as a leader. Ilya Flores is talkative in the circle. Jocelyn is on a mission right now.
That's awesome.
You'll be really excited to see. You know, what I really love is an athlete who, you know, she had a good, not great, sophomore year, and she'd be the first to tell you that it was the worst year she probably ever had. But still, she's that good that she still put up good numbers and was an All-American. But she learned. I love athletes that learn from their past and take a new approach, and she's got a new approach, and it is got leadership involved in it. She's very bubbly and showing that she really loves the game. So I feel that as well. Giselle, Shannon Sale, they're also involved in trying to lead. The one person that my heart is aching for, but I just know her and her mentality and her work ethic, is Nicole Mendez, who tore her ACL.
Oh, and my gosh.
Had, yeah. Well, maybe I shouldn't be saying this. I thought everybody knew. Okay.
I'm the last one to know. See, here's my rule. I want to make this rule very clear because I feel like, coach let me in the circle. If I ever hear anything, I usually go earmuffs. I'm like, I didn't hear that. And I was not aware of that. So I saw Nicole on campus and she said, hey, I need to call you and talk to you about something. And I never heard from her. So now I guess it kind of makes sense why she was trying to reach out a couple weeks ago. So,
well, thanks for not being there and returning a call.
She didn't call me. Really, she didn't call me. I texted her. Hey, call me anytime.
Well, yeah, you're a busy man, and that's okay. She, you know, I don't mind saying it because this woman is going to show everyone how to do it right.
That's awesome.
Like, she has a great mentality for someone who, look, what's at stake for her? She's a senior. She's got her senior year ahead of her, and she will be the only, she's going to be Kehlani made the U.S. team as an alternate. Nicole Mendez has made the Mexican national team. Nicole Mendez is going to be playing in the Olympic Games.
That's awesome.
As long as we can get her fully there. And that is a goal of mine, to help her get there. And it's a goal of hers. So she, instead of boo-hooing about it, she has been sitting on a chair, swinging off a tee. She's doing everything that she possibly can right now to stay, keeping her eyes trained, just anything she can do. She won't be able to move till probably late January.
So, okay, I question off that. Is that goal then to get her ready for potentially the home stretch of the season, or do you think that this is a situation where we're more concerned about, say, looking to the 2020 Olympics, coach, and potentially a red shirt for her? How will that potentially work?
We need her right now.
Okay.
And she knows that, and she wants that. So she is such a diverse young woman, and there's so many things that are waiting outside of OU for her, and I know that. With her surgery, she didn't have any torn meniscus, just a torn ACL, which really helps speed up recovery, hopefully. So I foresee her being ready. I mean, this is optimistic, but I believe in her. I believe that she's going to be ready to play by, like, early March. That's the hope.
That's awesome. Okay, I know I've kept you long. I'll leave you with this. How fun has it been for you to have that crew of they're not seniors anymore, but of graduates around you, and what Sid and I think what Foley still around, and to see Shay and then Kylie helping out a little bit. How fun and how helpful has that been in kind of transitioning to this whole new look?
It's really helped quite a bit. And they are all going to be great coaches. And to be honest, as a coach, one of the highlights of what I'm doing is watching our young players go into coaching. So we're talking about Paige Parker's back as our volunteer. Sid Romero, Shay, Foley, Kylie Lumberg's working with Jackie Livingston as help with director of operations. So they're almost all back. And then I also have my son DJ, JT. It's a very family feeling, and just very trustworthy. I trust these guys, and that's really important. So it's been fun. That's why it's made this whole transition to a new group of freshmen a lot easier, because they have a lot of help and people that know how to teach well.
If you missed the announcement, the Sooners will play against Iowa State next Saturday night, a primetime game. That's right. You heard right. A primetime showdown with Iowa State. And we'll get underway next Saturday. That's next Saturday, as the Sooners will square off against the Cyclones. Oklahoma still very much controls its own destiny for a spot in the Big 12 championship game. The kick time for next Saturday's game against Iowa State is set for 7 p.m. We'll be on the air on the Sooner Radio Network with a 5 o'clock pregame show. But hey, if you're a subscriber, if you follow the Sooner Sports Podcast, we have a special treat for you coming up as soon as Saturday breaks. I guess you could say midnight on Friday night, midnight tonight. We will have available
the entire Sooner Radio Network broadcast from the OU football win over Texas from the second Saturday in October. So if you subscribe and you need a little smile, we've got Oklahoma beating Texas coming up on the Sooner Sports Podcast. We'll have the entire radio broadcast for you available for download first thing on Saturday morning. So if you're not subscribed, if you just found us, hey, please go do so at Soonersports.com/podcast and enjoy OU Texas. We're back to our regular slate of shows starting on Monday, a live version of the Sooner Sports Podcast, and of course, our press conference recap. Until then, have a great final bye weekend of 2019. And until next week, Boomer Sooner, everybody.
This has been the Sooner Sports Podcast. Make sure to get all the latest episodes online right now at Soonersports.tv/podcast. And make sure to follow us on Twitter at OU On The Air.